Hi, I'm Lena.
And I'm Aman.
And welcome to Grounded Geeks,
where we make the geek world relevant.
And today, Aman, what are we talking about?
We are finally, in my opinion, finally covering Peacemaker.
Well, why finally? Didn't it just end?
It ended a few weeks ago, Lena.
Oh, I thought it ended like last week. Okay, whatever. No, I finished it. I finished it this morning. And yes, wow. You have been telling me to watch this show and I was putting it off, but I binge watched it over the last couple of days. And yeah, wow. There are so many things, so many themes we need to talk about when it comes to Peacemaker.
I mean, how you were, if I remember correctly, you were kind of turned off by the first episode. You were like, what is this weird ass shit?
Yeah, I just thought it was going to be like a lot of just, I mean, and the show still did this. They spent time in every episode where some conversation between two characters or multiple characters would just go off on a tangent for like a good 2 minutes. And you're like, oh, okay. And so I just thought the whole show was going to be like that and not be cohesive. But of course, that was wrong of me to think that James Gunn would do that, because he didn't. And I mean, yeah. So there was a lot of deep themes happening in this show. I mean, where do you want to start? Like, should we start with mental health, white supremacy, climate change? Like, what do you want to go off on first? You choose, Aman.
I was just thinking we should just start off with the biggest spoilers of the show. So, you know, if you haven't watched it, but are planning on watching all of it, now might be a good time to pause the episode, because and here we go.
Yeah.
All right. Like the Justice League cameos.
Oh my God.
At the very, very end. All right. Like fucking awesome. All right. I just fucking love that Jason Momoa and Ezra Miller had this moment, you know, where they're just playing off this joke on Aquaman, where and Jason Momoa is doing his Jason Momoa thing where mm-hmm. he's just like, oh, I hate that rumor. What, you don't? It's not a rumor. I was like, fuck you, Barry. And I mean, yeah. This is a line that, like, the way he said it, he'd never be able to say it in any of his actual Aquaman movies.
Yep, exactly.
Because those have to be PG-13. Mm-hmm. But it fits that character so perfectly. Mm-hmm. I feel like even though this was supposed to be just a cameo, I feel like it built on and continued to build upon the dynamic between Aquaman and Flash, which in the Justice League movies, I don't actually think there was that much direct interaction between those two characters.
Yeah, that's true. I agree. I don't think there was. When they first showed the Justice
happy moment for me.
When they first showed the Justice League, I thought it was just going to be their silhouettes. And then as they kept kind of going, zooming in closer,
right,
I was like, that's like a really accurate silhouette of Jason Momoa. And then when they show, I was like, yes, this is so great. They actually got Ezra Miller and Jason Momoa in there. So good.
I love how these actors are willing to do these random cameos. So when the Arrowverse on the CW had their Crisis on Infinite Earths event, okay, there was this absolutely beautiful moment where Grant Gustin's Flash and Ezra Miller's Flash interacted with each other.
Oh.
And they were literally just like looking at each other like, you're Barry, I'm Barry. Your suit looks so like aerodynamic. Oh, yours looks so comfortable. Like it was just this like cameos are great when they build upon the characters that already exist and create a moment that is still genuine to all the characters and the interactions that they would have in that cameo moment, mm-hmm. you know? And this was just another one of those moments where it was just so perfectly executed, in yeah. my opinion.
I also want to give a shout out in general to John Cena's acting, and he can play the piano. Like, what? It was... That one scene, remember?
I don't know if he was the one actually playing the piano.
That was totally him. They showed it. They weren't hiding his hands. They were showing his hands playing the keys. That was him.
Okay.
Playing. I'm fairly certain that was him. I mean, unless you really want to go through the trouble of matching the sound and his fingers playing the exact notes at the exact sign. Like that would be ridiculous.
I'm sure somebody in the internet has already done that.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? But I don't know. It looked like to me that he was playing it. So
yeah, yeah.
But in general, I'm very impressed with his portrayal of Peacemaker.
I know. Not just that, but like he has excellent comedic timing. And I mean, in those like extended tangents that you were mentioning, some of those in the post-credit scenes in the episodes, they have extended versions of that, of those. And in so many of them, it's just John Cena just riffing. And you can just tell it is totally off script. He's just going on a random rant. And it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. It was absolutely, like, I was blown away by his acting. I mean, I haven't seen acting set that good by a wrestler since The Rock.
Yeah, that's true. That is kind of funny how, yeah, there's like multiple wrestlers who can act. Interesting.
I mean, Hulk Hogan did a movie one time and it was mm-hmm. not good.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not saying every wrestler can act, but also, did you know that John Cena, I learned this yesterday, he is apparently like number one on the Make-A-Wish Foundation, like requests. I thought that's so adorable.
Oh, that is adorable.
Yeah. But yeah. Okay. Wait, can we talk about Peacemaker as a character now?
Yes.
And all his layers. So many layers.
So many layers, which I did not see coming.
Yeah. I totally didn't see it coming either. Cause you first just think he's kind of an asshole and he's going around being like, I fight for peace. I fight for peace. You know, and you're like, okay, what do you even know what that means? Like what?
Right.
But then when they slowly revealed his childhood and the trauma of being raised by a white supremacist father and
who literally had him and his brother in like cockfights.
Yeah. You know, awful. And just that scene was so sad. And so obviously a character like Peacemaker would have his being raised by this horrible man. He has, you know, echoes of him inside of him. And right. So he does say slightly racist things. He does say really messed up things or sexist things and all that. But it's then as you watch the show, you see his struggle right. to try to be this better person. And his relationship with Leota, what's her last name? Adebayo. That was really cool too. Like just seeing their friendship, their very unlikely friendship and just like how they helped each other grow too, because she is Amanda Waller's daughter. Amanda Waller is incredibly flawed and has a weird sense of justice as well, if you think about it. And so like Peacemaker like helps her figure out.
There's a lot of mirroring happening between those two characters, which you don't expect initially, but when you look at it, there's a lot of mirroring there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's, yeah. And then again, you know, as is the case with pretty much everything that we've been covering these days, there's so much mental that is covered or the lack of mental health.
The thing is that I think, though, it's a recurring theme on our podcast because it has to be, in a sense. And I feel like as superhero stories are becoming more sophisticated, mm-hmm. it is unavoidable to not, it, you can't avoid delving into the psyche of these characters, mm-hmm. which if you are going to put on a mask and run around fighting bad guys, all right, you're going to be fucked up in the head. All right. You in also, some way, shape or form.
You also clearly need to be a little fucked up in the head already for you to want to do that.
Yes.
to put on a mask and be some sort of crime fighting vigilante.
Yes. I mean, there's a lot of discussion in general about like Batman's trauma that led him to become Batman, less so with other superheroes, but anybody who's putting on a mask to fight bad guys, whether you're Peter Parker, all right, or Peacemaker, or, you know, even Superman, quite frankly, like you're dealing with some shit.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's unavoidable. Like, why else would you be doing that?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'm glad that the now more sophisticated portrayals of these heroes is covering this topic, which needs to be covered.
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with Peacemaker, like you were saying earlier, you know, our first live action impression of him that we got was from the Suicide Squad. Mm-hmm. All right. And he was very much written as a joke. And yeah. I like that in this show, basically, at first it was like, oh, Peacemaker's getting his own series. It's like, what? Why? Like, who gives a shit? Why That's- would anybody care about this? But I love how James Gunn basically took this character at face value and said, all right, if this person were real, what would it take? What would he have had to go through to become this joke of a human being?
Yeah.
And that's what this series really explored, which was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I wasn't very compelled to watch Peacemaker, because I thought it was just going to be like this weird, like just purely comedic sideshow. Because yeah, like I was saying this before we started recording, but I was telling you how Peacemaker seems like a joke. Like playing a joke on, for example, Captain America's character or Superman's right. character. And that's all it was in the Suicide Squad movie. And obviously there was like, and I also liked how in the Peacemaker show, they refer to his actions in the Suicide Squad movie. Also, yes. We're talking about the second Suicide Squad movie. He wasn't in the first one.
It's yeah. the Suicide Squad as opposed to Suicide Squad.
Right.
Apparently that article makes all the difference.
Weird. Anyway, yeah. Do we want to talk about, I mentioned the word vigilante. Do we want to talk about the character vigilante?
Oh my God.
Adrian?
Yeah, I mean, do we even have time to open up that Pandora's box of a human being right there?
Yeah. Wait, were we supposed to know who that was from something previous?
So like, he is a character that has existed in the comic books, but he hasn't appeared in any other live action anything
okay.
before.
Yeah, because I was like, I don't
Not
know if I should know who.
Anyways.
Okay, yeah, that actor, great job.
oh my God, so good.
And I was like, why does he look so familiar? And he was in the Harry Potter movies. He was in the Half Blood Prince. He played that character Cormac McLaggen. Do you remember him?
I never watched that movie. I know I might get some hatred, but after the fourth Harry Potter movie, I was just like, I can't do this anymore.
Oh no, I'm honestly with you. I really don't like the Harry Potter movies anymore. I enjoyed them as they were coming out, and now I'm like, they're pretty garbage.
Really, I mean, bad. After the when it took me 3 tries to get through the Goblet of Fire, all right,
yeah.
I felt like I had just gone through the Goblet of Fire.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Like, it took me 3 tries of watching that movie to get through it without falling asleep.
Yeah.
All right. And after that, I was like, all right, I'm done.
Anyway, yeah. Tangential thought. The character, the vigilante character, was great. Yes. Their interactions were hilarious. He clearly had the most sort of mental health issues that everyone was like, this guy has mental health issues, but we need him because we're fighting an alien invasion. So we really need all the people we can get, no matter what kind of background they come from. And I thought that was great.
I think for somebody like Amanda Waller and what's the name of the character who played the guy who was leading the team originally?
Mern.
Yeah. I think they actually preferred that Vigilante was seriously fucked up in the head.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because they're like, it doesn't. Like, we know he'll be ready to kill whatever, you know?
Yes.
Because Peacemaker was having his own internal conflicts about killing people in general. And which, as the show referred to, it was sparked from him killing
Rick Flag
in the Suicide Squad. So yeah, I love that connection that they were making with the movie and showing his internal conflict and as a result his character growth. Character growth is my absolute favorite thing, both on screen and in real life. Big fan. So yeah. But
I think one of my favorite moments in the show was towards the end, I think in episode 7, when they're all at the hospital, all right, at that veterinarian hospital, something, Eagly's been shot or whatever. And then Eagly gets up and gives Peacemaker a hug. And yeah. I think my favorite moment was Adebayo calling her wife and being like, I got to do this. I just saw a miracle. I saw an eagle hug a man. Like, that's a miracle.
And her wife was like, how is this related to anything? That was so funny. That was a very touching moment. But I think my favorite touching moment was when the character John Economos, which,
yes,
hilarious name, when he basically had to admit that he does in fact dye his beard. And
that was very sad.
It was such an emotional monologue, and he performed it so well, that actor. And and then showing everyone's faces and reactions and like Peacemaker's like realization that he truly has been such a bully towards him. And that was such a good, one of the best full circle moments that I've seen in general.
About
something that I hadn't even been thinking about because I thought it was just some dumb, stupid joke that they just kept bringing up over and over. And I'm like, this poor guy, geez, just leave him alone, whatever. And maybe his beard is just like that, you know? And then for that to come back, I was like, it was so good. It was like such an unexpected scene and so well done.
I'm very, very impressed with James Gunn's ability to take a stupid joke and turn it into a meaningful moment.
Yes.
And not a meaningful moment that has actual growth for the characters involved.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So good. Okay. But also, let us talk about the alien invasion and these bug overlords. Yes.
The main point, the main story plot.
Right. So, honestly, for me, when they revealed their true plan, they said, you know, our planet became uninhabitable for us because of our stupid mistakes. And then we came to this planet because we could drink the water, breathe the air. And they're like, well, we couldn't eat the food, but, you know, we made our own food, whatever. But then we realized this planet is on the same trajectory as ours, where people are ignoring the fact that all these natural disasters are linked to our actions. And man, that whole little monologue that character says was so good, because she said something like we take minor inconveniences, assaults on our freedoms. Yeah. And I was like, man, obviously, you know, clearly a commentary on what's happening with everything, with this pandemic, the insurrection, all of it, you know. And then when she said, like, that's why we're taking over the most powerful people, in terms of like politics, entertainment, whatever, to stop this from happening to your planet.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I mean, let's keep going then, you know?
Yeah.
I really wouldn't mind that.
I mean, the conflict that was the moral conflict that was created in the mission that this off the books team was trying to accomplish, which was to stop this invasion. Like, the moral clarity of it got muddied really abruptly.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, is it, and it's still a little muddy for me as well, you know, mm-hmm. was it better? Is it better to just leave our societies to make their own choices, even if they are bad ones, than it is to basically manipulate people into accomplishing something for the greater good?
Yeah. You know,
it's, yeah. I mean, I don't think there's a clear answer there.
This is sort of similar to what Thanos was trying to do too, right? He was like, I'm making the decision that
nobody else can make.
Yeah. And I'm making the decision to enforce population control on a really crazy, horrific level. And that will, you know, whatever, spare our resources, etc.
Yeah. I mean, I think the only difference here is that the butterfly's plan was actually good and looked like it might actually work to accomplish the goals they set out to, whereas Thanos' plan was dumb and would have failed.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But in accomplishing its own stated goals.
There were still a lot of people who were like, Thanos was right. So point is, yeah. Yeah, but no, I agree with you. Like, this could have been done. But you're still... The thing is, you are still sacrificing the people whose bodies that these bugs are...
Yes, and that's over. Why... But that's why, like... It's morally muddy, mm-hmm. you know, like what is that a cost that's worth paying if it means then that the planet continues to survive and thrive for the next foreseeable future measured in hundreds, if not thousands of years? Mm-hmm. All right. Is that a price that's worth paying? You know, I don't know. It's not clear to me. That the butterflies were more on the wrong side of the moral ledger here, you know? I know I'm mixing up my metaphors, but yeah, I mean, that's just not clear to me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not, there's no obvious answer for me here, philosophically speaking, ethically speaking even.
I think it just, yeah. It's more like you have to make a executive decision on what it is that you value. Do you value the bigger picture, or do you value each and every individual life more?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's
just sort of like a decision you have to make about yourself and your values.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
so deep. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I was not expecting from bug aliens.
Yeah. And isn't this also, I mean, I feel like I need to rewatch Peacemaker 2 because they threw in a lot of these conversations in pretty quick dialogue scenes, right? Especially between Adebayo and Peacemaker and stuff. Because she did say something like that too, where it's like, okay, well, are you treating human life as if it's all, you know, valued? And so, you know, I remember her saying something like that at some point. And I don't know. They had these conversations throughout the show, which was great.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Do we want to talk about white supremacy now?
Sure. Let's talk about white supremacy.
Yeah. What did you think about White Dragon?
The white there are lots and lots of similarities to the real life KKK. Because isn't there like some, what's the head person called in the KKK?
Grand Wizard? Oh,
Grand Wizard or some shit. Yeah. I swear, these people are such nerds. So yeah, obviously this stupid white dragon was reminding me of that. They had very similar KKK hoods that they were wearing. Yeah, I mean, I just think it was like an even nerdier version of the actual KKK.
I thought it was very interesting how Peacemaker's actual mental health issues derived very specifically from... I thought that there was a very direct line between his father's philosophy regarding white supremacy to his mission, from his mission all the way to how it affected Peacemaker's mental state as an adult. You know, I think that it was very interesting to see this path carve, where when you follow the dots, it really does lead right back to the philosophy of white supremacy here. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought that was very interesting how that was woven in together. And I also really appreciated that the duality of the portrayal of, and I keep forgetting the actor's name who played Peacemaker's father, and
I know I'm forgetting his name too.
Totally forget it. Like,
Robert, what was his name?
Robert.
Well,
Neil Robert. No. I just keep thinking T2 Terminator, the T-1000.
Yeah.
All right. Because he played the Terminator in Terminator
Robert
2.
Robert Patrick.
Oh, his name was. I mean, his acting is so brilliant.
His character's name was Augie Smith.
Augie Smith. Right. Yeah. So I do really appreciate how they showed that some of what we assume to be a portrayal of sort of unsophisticated people,
yeah,
right, does not actually mean unsophisticated. This guy had created a pocket dimension behind his bookcase and had a Doctor Who TARDIS in his closet. Mm-hmm. All right. And created some very, very advanced weaponry for Peacemaker and for himself. All right. Which I think really gets to I feel like the commentary that it's making is, regardless of the impression that you may have, these people, this philosophy can be an actual threat that should be taken seriously.
Yes.
All right.
100%.
I feel like that was sort of the underhanded side commentary that was happening there, you know. There's been this whole thing basically since 9/11, where the FBI every year has said that the greatest terrorism threat in America is white nationalism. Year after year, that is the greatest threat. And the response that we see from Congress is further and further direction, especially during the Trump years, to divert the FBI's resources from this actual threat to the threat of Islamic terrorism, basically.
Or really, you know, anyone else. Mexicans and immigrants, refugees. Yes. Yeah. Like
specifically about terrorism. And part of the reason for that is the narratives that we have created in our minds about these various groups. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of these sort of white nationalist groups, it's like, oh, these are just like hillbilly redneck hicks who can't tell apart their ass from their elbow, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's like, no, these people still need to be taken seriously as an actual threat, because your impressions of them are not reflective of what's actually happening.
Yeah.
That's my rant.
I completely agree with you that, and even now when we saw what was happening on the day of the insurrection, I mean, that was horrifying. I was genuinely wondering, as we were watching this footage unfold, I was like, oh my God, are we about to see members of Congress and the Senate get shot right now? Like, this is, it was terrifying, right? And then all of the subsequent footage that we've seen after that, like the freaking shaman guy and whatever, like, I mean, it's these people are terrifying, but they also do look idiotic. And as a way to make ourselves feel safer, I think our first response is to just make fun of them for being idiots. But they were also still able to breach the Capitol, which didn't even happen during the Civil War. So it's weird because we make fun of their stupidity, quote unquote stupidity, and all that as a defense mechanism, I think. But we still do not collectively as an American society take these people seriously, which is scary.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to mention that this also reminds me, I'm looking up something at the same time, but this reminds me of, there's this Netflix documentary called Behind the Curve. It came out a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's about people who are members of the Flat Earth Society, essentially, and who believe that the Earth is flat. And this group is also like, you think they're just some weird fringe group. There's like maybe a few, like 50 of them. No, there's way more people than you would think. And increasingly, a lot of these kinds of people who deny straight up science and facts and logic are getting into positions of power within the US government, for example. And I would say probably in multiple governments. And you should watch this documentary, Iman. It is something. It's called Behind the Curve. And that's the thing. It's like, we can't, just because their philosophy and their logic sounds completely whack to us, doesn't mean that these people are not powerful.
Yes.
So, I mean, that goes for white nationalists. It goes for flat earthers who are, you know, part of the growing group of people who just want to deny any sort of science. And
right. I haven't seen Behind the Curve, but you're telling me this right now, and I'm genuinely shocked.
Yeah,
I'm genuinely shocked. Because I would have assumed that anybody who believes still in this day and age that the Earth is flat, that I just assumed that that actually would include a number of other intellectual deficiencies that would prevent anyone from coming into a position of power.
No, that document
purely due to capability.
That documentary showed that there are flat Earth conventions that happen. There are people who have been flat earthers for generations in the same family. There's like a guy who was like, my grandfather was a flat earther, my father was a flat earther, I'm a flat earther, my son's gonna be a flat earther too. You know, like there's genuinely people say exactly.
Oh my God, I want to see this documentary now, because like you're saying that like it's a belief as opposed to a, like they think that this is a fact, like identity as a flat earther. Like,
And
I don't understand that.
I think a lot of
belief in a fact versus a definition of an identity. Like, this is very confusing to me.
I think a lot of it stems from the want and need and desire to simply resist any sort of authority. And like a lot of these people, they just don't want to, like, I don't know, like it's like a way to be very libertarian and like push off big government off. There's so many layers to it. It's fascinating and terrifying at the same time. So
real quick, what did you think of the intro?
Like the theme song intro?
The theme song. Yeah.
Oh, of Peacemaker. Yeah. I mean, at first I was like, this is goofy. And that's because so many of the characters who come and do this dance, I was like, you didn't meet them in the first step. But then by the end of it, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, like now you know who the cops are, and then the like judo master character.
Right.
I mean, I thought it was hilarious and
great. I mean, that exact same intro started off just weird, became hilarious because you have a character like Harcourt, all right, who you're then introduced to in the first episode, but you don't really know who she is when you see the theme song at the beginning of the first episode. And then when you see the theme song in the second episode, you're like, she's doing a goofy dance.
Yeah.
This badass is doing a goofy, funny dance.
Yeah.
It just kept getting funnier and funnier as the show went on.
Yeah.
Like I never hit the skip intro button.
I watched it in the beginning and then I watched it in the middle and then I watched it again. And then, well, cause I was trying to watch all the episodes before we recorded this.
Right.
So I was like, I need to skip the intro. It's too long. So yeah.
Yeah. All right. That was it.
Great.
I just wanted your impression.
No, of course. Overall, excellent show. And I'm really glad
so good.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many more layers to unpack, but this is all we could do for now. So as always, thank you for listening to Grounded Geeks.
And we'll catch you next time.